you would now, if you will, please, in the book of Revelation chapter 6. Revelation chapter 6. And once more, we'll look at verses 1 through 8. Revelation chapter 6, verses 1 through 8. And I saw when the Lord opened one of the seals, and I heard, as it were, the noise of thunder, one of the four beasts saying, "Come and see." And I saw and beheld a white horse, and he that sat on him had a bow, and a crown was given unto him, and he went forth conquering and to conquer. And when he had opened the second seal, I heard the second beast say, "Come and see." And there went out another horse that was red, and power was given to him that sat thereon to take peace from the earth, and that they should kill one another, and there was given unto him a great sword. And when he had opened the third seal, I heard the third beast say, "Come and see." And I beheld, and lo, a black horse, and he that sat on him had a pair of balances in his hand. And I heard a voice in the midst of the four beasts say, "A measure of wheat for a penny, and three measures of barley for a penny. And see that thou hurt not the oil and the wine." And when he opened the fourth seal, I heard the voice of the fourth beast say, "Come and see." And I looked, and behold, a pale horse, and his name that sat on him was Death, and hell followed with him, and power was given unto him over the fourth part of the earth to kill with the sword, and with hunger, and with death, and with the beasts of the field. Let's pray. Dear kind and gracious Heavenly Father, as we come before thee this afternoon, Lord, we're so thankful for the day that you gave us. We're thankful, so, Lord, so much for the service that you sent us this morning. And Lord, as we look into this passage this afternoon, Father, I pray that you give us receptive hearts and minds to the great truths that are within this verse. And Father, I pray that if there would be one here this afternoon that's lost, this would be the time you would speak to their hearts. And do the Lord what you do, we'll thank you. For these things we do ask in Jesus' name. Amen. The subject I'd like to draw our thoughts to this afternoon is the second part of Here Come the Horsemen. Here Come the Horsemen, part 2. We're going to continue looking at our study of the four horsemen and as they came and the work that they'll do. We looked up to this point. We got the very beginning of it and then through the first horse. And we saw that what is going on at this particular time is now the Antichrist is beginning to establish his rule. Now things are beginning to really ramp up. Now things are going to be going on that nobody could have ever imagined before. And quite frankly, nobody will ever be able to think back on afterwards and begin to have any comprehension of what fully was going on. We need to know that the Antichrist is that one who will be empowered by Satan. He is the one that will be able to do things that the world as a whole has longed for. He'll promise them the world, basically, and they will buy into it, and they will flock to him by the droves, only to be shown his true colors at the midpoint of the tribulation. And I'm going to go ahead and move through this, and we're going to pick up right away with the red horse of destruction. The second horse and rider appears, and this horse is red. In my mind, I'm trying to imagine how bright a red we're talking about. You know, when you see a cow that's referred to as being a red cow, or you know, it's not really a bright red; it's more of almost a rust color than anything. So I'm not about to head to guess on this, but we do know that red is the color of fire. It's also the color of blood, showing that it is a color of judgment, a color of pain, a color of suffering that goes on. Fire has the power to devour and destroy, and when the fires of this world are unleashed upon the earth, there will be bloodshed on an unprecedented level. This will be war waged in ways and means that nobody's ever thought of in the past. This seal unleashes a time of war such as the world has never known. Now, I begin by saying that the peace is broken. Remember, the Antichrist came and he promised world peace. And he promised peace amongst Jew and Arab. He promised peace in the world as a whole, and things that had never been seen before, had hoped for, but had never been seen. But this peace is something that is very, very short-lived. War will begin to break out. This is what Jesus said would happen. This is something that he prophesied would happen in the tribulation. In Matthew chapter 24 and verses 6 through 8, the scripture says, "And ye shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that ye be not troubled." See that ye be not troubled. Why? "For all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in divers places. All these are the beginning of sorrows." So when this begins to take place, don't think that it's about over. I don't think that it's going to be just a short, brief period and all suffering will be over with. No, this is just the beginning of the problem that's going to come. This is only the beginning of sorrow and troubles, the likes of which nobody had ever seen before. Jesus also warned about too much stock in the cries of peace that are talked about every cycle, election cycle, by the politicians and rulers of this world. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 3, "For when they shall say peace and safety, then sudden destruction cometh upon them, as travail upon woman with child, and they shall not escape." And you think about the comparison as travail with a woman with child. You know, they can give a pretty good guess as to when the lady is going to deliver a child. You know, they can narrow it down somewhat, but I have found after years of observation that a baby comes when a baby wants to come, regardless of what the doctor says. They kind of, to make it more precise, that baby comes when God tells it to come. And last I checked, God don't consult with doctors as to when it's going to happen. Suddenly, many times unexpectedly, some may even go so far to say at the worst possible time, that child will decide, or the Lord will decide for that child to be born. So something is sudden. These that have put all their hopes and trust in peace, these that have put all their hopes and trust into those that could come around and that alleviate the problem, well, destruction is going to strike them down very, very unexpectedly and very suddenly. Can you imagine a world that throughout the expanse of the globe that knows no peace at all? And you think about during World War II. World War II, it was a war that encompassed most of the world. I'll say most of the world, but even in Europe, which was torn apart, there were countries like Switzerland, which was neutral, that nobody messed with because they were in fact neutral. There are places, no few, there were some places, I guess, they didn't think it was worth fighting for. They were kind of left alone. But by and large, it was a worldwide. This will, in fact, will be worldwide. There'll be no place on the globe that's spared from what it'll be like at that particular time. In every corner of the globe, violence and wars will rage. That, beloved, is the world that people will face, the world that people are going to have to deal with during the tribulation period. The writer is given a great sword. He's given a great sword. So this planet is going to be brutalized. The word great does not refer necessarily to the size of the sword or the strength of the sword or the sharpness of the sword or any of that, but rather it refers to the extent of the world or the warfare. The fact that it is going to be worldwide, a great sword that's going to cover the encompass the whole globe and everything that's thereon. These swords that were used at this time, the reference is made to is to the Roman short swords. And when you think of swords, if you think back to the medieval ones, you kind of miss the point. Those are great, big, massive, heavy swords that were used to help to be able to crack through the armor of the knights and so on. Not so. These are those little Roman short swords. And they might look at them and think, well, what kind of damage could they do? Well, they could do a lot of damage in hand-to-hand combat. Now, these swords were not razor sharp, and it's far from it. Why? Well, if you have a knife that's razor sharp, what happens if you hit it against much? It blunts that edge, doesn't it? It rolls it over. The edge didn't fit for nothing. So their swords were certainly sharp enough to cut. Just ask Malchus the servant, or the high priest servant Malchus, I'll get it right. Just ask him about what one of those swords would do. But it was something that they would have to wield pretty sharply. And they were more brutal than they were surgically precision weapons. And they were very, very effective in hand-to-hand combat. When the Antichrist first steps on the world stage, he will be hailed as a man of peace. However, after he's given the reins of power, which is all he's ever wanted, when those reins of power have been placed upon his hand, he displays his true colors. After people have allowed him a place of prominence and a place of power, he will then demand absolute power. Now, what do we know about absolute power? It does what? It corrupts? Absolutely. And you take somebody like him who is empowered by the devil, it doesn't take much to see what, or much to think about what he can do and how evil he can go. When this happens, many of the powerful nations of this world will rebel. If your nation was a powerhouse, are you going to want to lay down everything that somebody gets up and say, I want all power? You think they're just going to set aside themselves? No, they're going to rebel against that. They're going to buck up against it, and they will experience war on a scale that has never been seen before as Antichrist and those that are aligned with him will begin to take those one by one by one by one. Now think about a comparison here. During World War II, some 50 million people died worldwide. That's a lot of people. That, of course, takes into account civilians as well as soldiers. But 50 million people worldwide, that's a lot of folks. That number that it's hard to even think about, will not come close to the millions that will die during the wars that will rage during this time. It won't even scratch the surface to all those. The wars that the Antichrist spawns will rage one after the other and after the other for a time. All the nations will come at one point where they will gather against Israel at the battle of what? Armageddon. The Lord will come back then. And out will proceed the sword from his mouth that will utterly defeat them once and for all the nations. You know that there's a little battle later on, battle of Gog and Magog, but that's an insignificant battle compared to what we're talking about here. This one, all the great armies will gather to try to destroy Israel once and for all. I'm not making a comment one way or the other concerning a person's affiliation. That's not the point of my comment. But you know that that woman from Minnesota, that's the Muslim woman? I heard her say with my own ears just yesterday, talking about what their ultimate aims were and how they needed to educate Muslims and people that would be prospective Muslims and so forth. And their ultimate aim was, according to her, was that Muslim laws will be established here in this country, and that the United States will become a Muslim country. The United States, a Muslim country.
We're getting there.
We're headed that way very quickly. But you know, the thing of it is, it really shouldn't surprise us because we're godless now as a people. But that's a scary thing to think about. That this great land could turn that way. And how long do you reckon we'll be a friend of Israel then? And once we turn on Israel, how long do you think we'll be here? I will bless them that bless thee. curseth them that curseth thee. But that's, I just wanted to throw that in. It seemed like it fit right here. Giving this some thought, think about a world consumed by war. Nations will fight against nation. Race wars, class wars, religious wars will abound everywhere you turn and everywhere you look. Peace will be elusive for everyone everywhere, but they'll still long for it and look for it and hope for it. And add to the fact that there will be no mothers, no fathers, no churches praying for the soldiers in the field. Why? Because the church is gone, right? We've already been taken out of here. This is all that's left. Will be those that have to go through the tribulation. Now, having said that, we do know that there's going to be 144,000 Israelites that will be preserved, right? We do know about that. And I'm not even talking about them right now. That's a different study at another time. But talking about the world as a whole, there's nothing going to be left. But those that are the ungodly and the godless masses. What a horrible, horrible time. No preachers taking the gospel to a person that's dying in a foxhole. Time of war fought without God and without hope. You know, brutality unleashed with nothing to hold it back. Just unleashed upon men. After that, we see the black horse of this destitution. The third seal is broken, and another rider makes his appearance. This horse is black. Now, black is a color that is associated with famine. And you know, famine is that which always follows war. Why? Because everything's been destroyed. Most of the men, or a number of the men, have been killed. The land, the farmland, has been decimated with people and troops and equipment running over it. The equipment's been destroyed. There's nothing left. They're probably where the seeds have been stored would be destroyed, so they're having to start all over again. Famine always follows war. Therefore, worldwide wars will cause worldwide famines. This is what Jesus spoke of in Matthew 24 in verse 7, where he said, "For kingdom shall rise up against kingdom, for nation shall rise up against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in divers places." A time marked by a tremendous shortage. He says he'll come riding in with a scale in his hands. Scales, you know, is used for measuring whatever is to be weighed against to see what it's worth and what it'll bring. This indicates that the tribulation period will be marked by severe shortages of those things that are necessary for life. Apparently, the famine will be so severe that food and other basic necessities will be in very, very short supply. The wage scale at the time that this was written and at the time that John wrote this would have had to be that in common, average worker would work a day for a denarii. Now the denarii was something by what we would talk about would be a penny. You like to go out and work all day for a penny? This was a scale that was going on when John wrote this. Now think about what he said. For a whole day's work, a denarii that they get paid for an entire day work. Now their day wasn't like ours either. It wasn't an 8-hour day. It wasn't even a 10-hour day. It was a day out to sun up to sun down day. Hard labor that they had to go out and do. And for that many hours, for that whole day, that he would get enough in his denarii that he would have, he could get one measure of wheat with three measures of barley. Now, a measure of wheat was approximately what a laboring person would eat in one meal. One meal. A whole day's wage for one meal. What I was talking about here. If they used a coin to purchase barley, which is a cheaper grain, they would have enough to buy enough of it to have three good meals as opposed to having enough to buy only for one meal. Now we don't know a thing about shortages like that. We don't know a thing about having to exist in a time like that. The closest thing that I've ever read about that folks would have ever had to dealing with that would have been those that would have been dealing with the ration books that were put out during World War II. We have some of Elaine's grandfather's ration books, and they're interesting to look at and see what the stamp performed, what you can get for them. Things that we take for granted today, things that we just assume we can go out and buy anytime we want to. Things like sugar, coffee, butter, meat, cheese, canned goods, shoes, and gasoline were all carefully rationed. And during the height of World War II, sugar was limited to 12 ounces a week. 12 ounces a week, not even a pound. That's not a lot of sugar. Gas was limited to 3 gallons per ration period. 3 gallons, that's all. I don't know that I could get from here to Bethlehem back on 3 gallons in my truck, let alone to have to go through a whole ration period with only 3 gallons. Here's one that just kind of hits you right here. Coffee was rationed at 1 pound for a 5-week period. 1 pound of coffee for 5 weeks. Remember, I used to hear tell people adding chicory to their coffee to make it go further. And I heard that's some of the nastiest stuff you ever drank. But desperate times call for desperate measures. Say, well, I drink tea. Why are you going to do when you run out of sugar? You know? But 1 pound for 5 weeks. Now, those would have indeed been very, very tough times to live through. But nothing will compare to the tribulation period and how bad that will be. It's a time marked by starvation. Every 3.6 seconds, somebody dies of starvation in the world. Now, if you watch the TV ads, you think it only happens during Christmas time. That's when all the time they're taking all the ads to save the starving kids. But every 3 seconds, not just December, all year long, a person dies from starvation. Every year, 15 million children die of starvation and of hunger-related illnesses. 4 million people starve to death every single year. Remember we talked about this morning how wealthy that we are compared to the world? 1.3 billion people live on less than $1 of income per day. That makes us pretty rich, doesn't it? Less than a dollar a day they have to live on. Another 3 billion have to try to survive on less than $3 a day. And as horrible and terrible as those figures are, they will be dwarfed by the starvation problem that the world will face during the tribulation when this black horse, the rider of the black horse, is unleashed upon this world. A time marked by separation. The phrase, "And see thou hurt not the oil and wine," I think when you consider what these items were and how they were used, may very well indicate that luxury items will not be affected by the famine. Oil and wine has always been items of the wealthy. Of course, everybody had wine, everybody had access to oil, but the rich had an abundance of both, of anything that they wanted. Oil was used in the manufacture of cosmetics, and alcohol has always been associated with the high life. You don't believe me? Just watch any sporting event, you'll see all kinds of ads Hey, buddy, all you got to do is watch these sporting events, drink your beer, and have the time of your life. That's what the ads say, what they seem to indicate. While most of the world is plunged into poverty and starvation, the rich will continue to get richer and enjoy the extravagant lifestyles that they enjoy now. They are the ones that will be the driving forces behind the problems that are going on, because as they look at it, it's not really affecting them as much. They're not spared entirely, but it won't be quite as much. Think about what we do. The average American puts enough food in the trash can each day to feed a family of six in some of the poor countries of the world. For the price of one missile, now I'm, don't get me wrong, you might tend to think of some of these statistics I'm going to give you that I'm against being militarily prepared. I am not. I think a strong military is of the utmost essence. And I'm not speaking out against a strong military. But the fact remains what they are. For the price of one missile, a school full of 100 children could eat lunch every day for 5 years. For the price of one of those missiles. Throughout the 90s, more than 100 million children died from illness and starvation. And those 100 million deaths, from a human standpoint, could have been prevented for the price of 10 stealth bombers or what the world spends on its military in 2 days. Again, I'm not against a strong military. I'm just drawing comparisons here to how it is and what could be done. To satisfy the world's sanitation and food requirements would cost only $13 billion U.S. dollars. Think about it. $13 billion. So that's horrible. Let me give you a figure that'll open your eyes. That's what the people of the United States and the European Union spends on perfume each year. Each year. You know, let me throw this in. This is extra. I'm not going to charge you anything for it. It doesn't matter, you know, how much you pay for your perfume and how lovely it smells and how much you like it and other people like it. Just because people like it don't mean you have to take a bath and stuff. You know, you ever hear about some of them that think they can cheat her by the gallon? You know, no, it's not what that's supposed to do. No, please don't. But think about that. How many people could be taken care of for what's spent in a year? Just 1 year. The assets of the world's richest men are more than the combined gross national product of all the least developed countries on the planet. The division between the haves and the have-nots is vast today. And it's only going to grow wider and wider and be far wider yet during the tribulation. Next, the pale horse of devastation. What are we talking about? The word pale comes from the same Greek word that gives us the English word for chlorophyll or chlorine, which means green. We think about pale, we think about pale white. No, this is a pale, sickly green, a yellow green. This was the same sickly pallor of a corpse, you know, just recently passed. It's a disgusting color to have to look at. The events that take place in the wake of this horse and rider are also the things that inevitably follow the time of war. However, these particular events seem to take place independently from those which come before. We're told that the rider on the pale horse is called death, and hell follows him. Talks about all those who are going to be plunged in the fiery pits of hell during that time. All those that will leave this world not knowing the Lord. All those that will leave this world doomed, without any hope, or any way to save themselves. The word death speaks of the death of the body. That's a big duh. Well, I guess it is. Sometimes we need to be clear. The word hell reminds us that there is, in fact, a terrible place waiting to receive the souls of lost people when they are taken by death. You also want to throw in the breath of this devastation. We're told that death will come and claim 1/4 of the world's population, which means that 1 out of every 4 people living at that time will die. Now, if you take today's population, they tell us there's around 6 billion people, And we're talking about the death of 1.25 billion in a very short time period. That's a lot of people dying very quickly. It's hard to conceive of death on a scale like that, but that's what's coming. Now I'm going to take it a little further. We also know that during those days, three quarters of the world's Jews will be killed. Three quarters of them. In 2018, they tell us that there was 14,606,000 Jews worldwide. So working off of that particular number, that would mean that 10,954,500 will be killed. And out of 14,606,000, there would only be 3,651,500 alive. Hitler would have loved a program like that. And that is far worse than what Hitler ever conceived of doing. Only 3 million out of 14. You know, we think about the workings of Satan, and we think about the workings of Satan in the future. But does Satan not work in our land today? Do we not have to deal with with Satan and his emissaries? How? How do we deal with it? Well, there are people that fight against us. There's powers that fight against us. There's all that kind of thing going on. There's also a lot of other ways that Satan works. You know, him and his little buddies, they have ways to torment people, and they're very good at it. They have ways of destroying, well, I won't say destroying, but certainly disrupting life, disrupting happiness. And we need to be aware of that, of what they do. We're aware that they are very much alive around us. They are very active around us. Because to go around and stick our head in the sand doesn't do anybody any good. We need to be aware of it. I've often said, or at least I've thought of, I never said, I think there's, if everybody would speak up rather than thinking something to be ashamed of, which I've never understood, but if everybody would speak up, there's far more people that know a little bit about what I'm talking about than that don't. You know, it's a shame. It's a shame that they have such a stigma with it, which I don't understand. But anyway, back to this. The brutality of this devastation. The methods that death will use in claiming great number are listed for us. Sword. This refers to warfare in general. Now, if you read people's thoughts in this, there's no shortage of people that think that this will include both. Since it talks about war in general, that's going to talk about conventional warfare as well as thermonuclear warfare. I don't know. The Bible doesn't say. But that would certainly explain why with that many people being killed in short order. That would certainly explain some of the devastations going on at that particular time. I'm not about to stick my neck out there and somebody lop it off, but the Bible don't say. If that is so, then it only stands to reason that there'd be some countries that would use biological and chemical warfare as well. Again, that would certainly explain as many people dying in quick numbers. Or, if you're going to look at the reading of the book of Revelation, it could go back to conventional warfare as it was thought back in that time. Because the Bible later on talks about the blood running up to what? The horses' bridles. And I can't find anything, anyway, anyhow, to make anything other than a horse a horse. And I can't think about trying to put a bridle on anything other than a horse. I mean, you ever try to put a bridle on a tank? That'd be some bridle, wouldn't it? Or did you ever try to set a straddle on a tank and go down? I'm being silly now. But you see, when you're talking about a horse, the bridle of a horse, what else can it be but the bridle of a horse? So I guess maybe from what I'm saying, you can see what side of this argument I land on. I think the Bible's pretty clear in what it says. It means what it says and says what it means. But I thought I would at least throw that out there to you. And then it talks about famine. This is something we've already looked at in the many millions that will meet their deaths in that way. Death. This refers to death apart from warfare and famine. In Matthew chapter 24 and verse 7, Jesus said this, again, for nations shall rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in diverse places. The word pestilence always brings to mind the idea of disease that will run rampant through the human race during this time period. Now, what's the best way or the biggest spreader or whatever you want to say for disease? Through rodents, isn't it? And some of the insects that are with the rodents. They tell us that contrary to what we've had to deal with here recently or semi-recently, the outbreak of Spanish influenza at the end of World War I was far greater than any outbreak that's ever hit in our day. And they tracked that down, all the way down to the fleas that were off the rats during World War I. Fleas. Look at the disease that a little teeny tiny tick that you can barely see can cause. Think of the torment. And I've never read yet how it got started back. And I'll be honest with you, I probably don't really want to know. But as a kid, I heard people talking about bed bugs in the past tense. And what had to happen if there was bed bugs. And what did they do? They went out and burnt mattresses. That's what they did. Lock, stock, and barrel. Past tense. Went through all my teenage years, my young adult years. Past tense. And what happened all of a sudden? Here they are again. Problem again. How? I don't know. But it's there. Well, I'm going to make a few enemies on this. Anybody, the folks listen to this. And I may hit somebody here crosswise. But it is what it is. I'm sorry. Those parents that are anti-vaxxers, they're acting criminally against their children. You know, if I would have taken Joshua out when he was a baby, when he was a child, if I would have taken him out and threw him out in the path of an oncoming D-kick when he'd been killed, I would have been arrested and charged and convicted of criminal negligence resulting in the death of my child. Would I not? And rightly so. Well, I'm just waiting to see one of those anti-vaxxers get brought to death there and have a child die of one of those diseases. Because to me, that's criminally negligent resulting in the death of a child. That's just my two cents. I won't charge him for that. But we all have an idea of what the disease can do. And pestilence is usually what we think about of bringing about. Look at all the concern we have today for the coronavirus and all the worries that go with that. Talks about beasts. Now that word is kind of a general word in as much as it takes in both large and small. Not just lions and tigers and bears, oh my, but taking any of the small critters. And I tell you what, and I'm sorry, Jesse, but if you think about how cuddly and nice and warm and pretty and cute a little raccoon is, there's not a more vicious animal in the woods than a raccoon. They'll drown any dog they can get a hold of in a creek. Am I telling you the truth? And they'll jump on any dog they have. They'll jump on anything. Yeah, that little thing is that cuddly and that warm and that wonderful looking. And think about that nice little fox. Boy, don't that thing look just something you pick up and hold and just love on? What's that fox going to do when he grows up? Coyote doesn't look that much different than a dog. And boy, don't those things, them things are horrible. And the list could go on and on and on about how even the small animals can cause a lot of trouble. In short, I think it's safe to say that this is going to be a truly horrible, horrible time to live. And thank the Lord that we're not going to be here to experience it. We're going to be in glory. And still, because the Spirit of God will not have been dealt with them, the Spirit of God will be by and large taken out where the church goes. but they will never turn their eyes to the Lord. They're just going to keep on going on and keep on suffering and keep on dealing with what's going to come. And as we'll see, the worst is yet to come. I wish I could say differently.